Welcome to another uncontrollable episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Runaways by Brian K. Vaughan. And now, the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the 103rd episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy. I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we're going on with our host choice series, at least that's what we're calling it, with Jen's choice, and we did Runaways. This is volume one from 2003 by Brian K. Vaughan. I think the spine of the trade says Tsunami, but really it's Marvel, you know. You can get it on Marvel Digital, all kinds of cool stuff. And it's like in a manga looking format, isn't it?
Yep. It's, well, not really manga. It's manga sized. It's teeny weeny and kind of fat.
You know what, though? I kind of like that. It's like, it's more comfortable to hold in your hand. Like if you're walking or if like you're in a subway or something, it's more comfortable to hold in one hand. I kind of like the size.
True. The thing is, it doesn't, like, fit well on the bookshelf if you're trying to have, like, a really cohesive-looking collection.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't look as pretty.
Yeah.
It looks pretty when you have, like, four or five of them, wink, wink.
Well, I just bought the first three, so.
There you go.
So is each, I read it online on the Digital Marvel website, so is each manga-sized object one issue?
It's like one volume, so I have volume one, it's issues 1 through 6.
Yep. And that's
one manga book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so it's decent sized. I don't know, like half an inch thick.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into it. Let's just cut it to the chase. What do we think of the story? You sound like you have something to say. Get on.
Okay,
it.
Okay, so my first encounter with Runaways was I read the Young Avengers Runaways crossover that was part of the Secret Invasion storyline way back when. And so that was my whole exposure to them. When this was assigned, I guess you could say, I sat down to read it, and instead of reading issues 1 through 6, I read issues 1 to 18 in one sitting.
Nice.
So yeah.
Definitely engrossing.
Yeah.
I feel like I chose well, just putting that out there.
I agree with you.
I do think you did. I was hooked like from the first little bit with the vignettes for each one of these characters. Because, you know, it's such a unique challenge in mainstream comics, at least in the big two, to make a story with a new character, right? I mean, it's so easy to do Spider-Man or Batman or whatever the fuck, because everybody knows the origin. You don't have to worry about it. Everyone knows the character. You can just hit the story with the ground running, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But with something like this, you got to get the reader in and the story moving just as quickly, but you also have to introduce every single character.
Yeah.
And I like the way that it was done here. Like, first you see the primary character of the story is going to kind of revolve around, and then it sort of grows out from there, and you see the same, like, similar but shorter vignettes with the other characters who end up showing up in the show. And I really like them. I really loved, I don't know, maybe it's just because pandas happened to come out to the Warcrafts right at the same time that I was reading this, but I really liked Alex's intro. And I really want to play that RPG where you are the whatchamacallit, the heroes, but they don't have a Marvel RPG yet, anyway.
I really liked that it introduced something super familiar to bring in, like, all these brand new characters and a brand new enemy. So, you know, like, it's freaking Captain America and the Hulk is angry and he's going to attack the White House. Like, that is the most, like, prototypical freaking Marvel scenario that you could even think of.
Yeah, it's eye-roll inducing, it is. But that's perfect. That's perfect for these characters. But I think that's one of the, I don't know, it's like one of the great things about writing teenagers, you know? Because if they do something stupid, it's fine. They're teenagers. They're stupid. Right? Like if you write something like, and if it's, as a reader, if I read something, then I'm like, oh, that was kind of dumb. it's easily rationalized. Of course it was kind of dumb. These are fucking teenagers, and they're all kind of dumb. Just like, I don't remember whose father it was, but one of their fathers says, don't they call you the wise fools? It was Gertrude's father.
Gertrude's father. Yeah.
Yes. That in the vignette was perfect.
And then she was said something like, that's fake etymology, Dad. And I liked that part.
Yes.
Like, I found all of the characters to be inherently likable from the vignettes. Like, they just... they seem like real people, even though they're these weird, mega-rich superhero kids. Well, they don't know it yet, but it's kind of refreshing that there's nothing that strange about them. It could be anybody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're very much... because even the everyday, quote-unquote, normal characters, right? Like Peter Parker. You're supposed to be able to identify with Peter Parker, right? Because, oh, he's a college kid, and he has problems, and his girlfriend this, and college that. But really, the dude invented his own, like, the web fluid, you know? And, like, half of the shit on him that makes him Spider-Man he invented because apparently he's some kind of, like, secret genius. Like, that's not realistic. That's not common. There's nothing about that that's normal.
I mean, these kids aren't normal. They clearly live different lives than most. I mean, who in their sophomore year of high school is arguing with their father about fake etymologies? And I mean, like, one of them is, like, clearly physically abused by his engineer father, and he's just like, fuck you, Dad.
And he's like a lacrosse player or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not normal. Carolina is the daughter of, like, two Hollywood stars. But at the same
didn't they
time,
say that,
they're not...
that their parents have Emmys?
Yeah.
They were like soap stars at some point, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, their non-normalcy is not out of bounds, which I think is cool. It's like, you know, this isn't your average teenager. This isn't Harry Potter where, like, anybody could get a letter to Hogwarts, so you should feel bad if you get one. Right? This is... I don't know. Like, these people are already kind of special. From the moment we see them, they're just special in a very non-comic book way.
But I think part of the thing that helps you, or at least one of the things that really helped me ground myself with these characters and realize that they were just kind of normal teenagers in the way that Peter Parker isn't and Robin, like Tim Drake, isn't, you know, is that when they're there hanging out in the room and they're just sitting there in the game room like, oh, this is so horrible. I've had moments like that growing up with, like, my family. You know, I see my cousins 4 or 5 times a year. We all have to sit in a room and pretend and like, play as if we know each other really well and are super close, but actually haven't fucking seen this person in 4 months. I don't have any idea what's going on with their lives and what the hell. Like, that moment seemed very familiar to me. And then the thing that really set that is when they're sitting there in the room, they're, like, arcade games around the game room had, like, the most fucking boring titles or, like, the most cliche... Like, if you go to the nickel and dime arcade, it's going to be the crap that's been sitting there for, like, 20 years. Like, the ones that just say pinball or, like, hop a ride. Like, not even the good, not even Pole Position, not even, like, a good classic. One of the shitty alternate ripoffs of Pole Position. That's what they had in the arcade room. It's just this feeling of intense teenage boredom whenever they weren't doing fantastical stuff. And I think those details are what really set that tone.
Yeah, and they clearly, I mean, we get Alex as our window into their disdain for each other, right? Because he's like, that dorky girl took all of my Prisoner DVDs and never gave them back, and that other guy keeps calling me brother. And at first I was like, is he some weird, like, hippie yogi type dude? Turns out he's just a bro.
Yeah, he's just a stupid surfer bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a good dynamic to start with. Their general dislike of each other is actually appealing.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, for me, it keeps coming back around to the fact that it fits, right? I mean, they're teenagers. Teenagers don't like things. That's just the general mode of existence of the teenager, is to not like things and be disdainful of everything. So, of course, these random people that you see once a year, you know?
And you're forced to get by your parents.
Exactly. You have no other choice. But at the same time, well, they don't appreciate it, and you get their perspective of not appreciating it when they have to pull together. They don't even realize it, but they fall back on this familiarity that they've had for so long with each other. Right? Like, it doesn't take long for them to start working together because they've seen each other every year of their lives growing up. Like, they've got at least 16 years of remembering what they've been like as they've grown older, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at the same time, they don't have so much familiarity that as readers we're going to be bored with it, because they're clearly finding out new and different things about each other. Like when Nico walks into the room and Alex is like, oh!
Hella hot! So, okay, the other thing that I really want to talk about is, who was your favorite? New characters are always really fun, and when you throw them on the team and they have the dynamic between them, and especially when they're like six different sort of general archetypes for what that kind of person would be. Like, we get the six stereotypical different kinds of teenager, and then as they discover who they really are and who their parents really are, the spin gets put on it. So who did you like the most, and whose spin did you like the most? Like, who did you enjoy finding out about? I gotta say, I really loved Molly, the little girl. It took a long time for me to buy into her, but when they were handing each other nicknames, and she said, "Oh, but I wanted to be Princess Powerful." I was like, "Oh, Molly, it's okay. You can be Princess Powerful. It's a fucking wonderful name. I am down for that."
I would have to say Nico is my favorite, because she's revealed slowly. Like, at first, you know, you don't even see her. You just know there's some kid trying to mix black nail polish in his or her room. And you're like, huh, some weird emo kid. And then it turns out to be, like, this cute little goth girl.
Yeah. That first moment, you kind of roll your eyes, too, because it's that kind of thing, like, okay, having your fingernails be black is more important than anything else right now. Like, really have some perspective. Your parents are like, for all you understand, your parents are going to this fundraiser thing to raise money for disenfranchised whatever the fuck somewhere in the world. Right? Like, come on. Your fingernails don't have to be black. You don't even like these people.
But in the end, it works for her, because it's not like she's just, like, a sad emo kid. She had this whole thing going. She's, like, actually really pulled together, and she even, like, sewed her own clothing.
Yeah.
So it's actually like, oh, she's really invested in looking nice for these people. And it was that turnaround with her that was kind of cool.
So who did you like, David?
Well, you already said Molly, so I'll talk about somebody else.
I actually like her. I didn't mean to just take yours.
It's okay. You should have known, but that's fine. I actually like Gertrude a lot also.
Yes.
I don't know. She's the snarky one. And she doesn't seem like she would be, right? Because she's the nerd of the team, if you have to classify them into different high school stereotypes. Because that's what I was thinking as I was reading this, was which high school, like, teen drama stereotype do these characters fill? And Gertrude's, like, obviously the nerd, but she's also snarky, and I don't think nerds are necessarily always the snarky ones. Like, I could see her pushing up her glasses all the time every time she says something to someone.
Right, in the whole debacle when she couldn't find her glasses, and they, like, had to go and find something, and then they couldn't, so they just got contacts, but then they had to go get the contact solution, and it was, like, this whole fucking thing, and then the end, like, the next issue, you realize they were just in her pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And she's, you know, despite the fact that she has a dinosaur, she seems, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I don't know. She puts on this, like, facade for everybody. Like, she acts kind of, like, snarky and kind of distant, but she's, like, kind of a really caring person. She's almost like the mom, too, because she's the one who takes care of Molly for most of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, she just seemed like a really interesting character. Yeah. And her parents are time travelers.
Which is, like, it's just, everything. She is really awesome. She has that sort of typical nerd defensiveness, you know, and it comes off as snarkiness or sarcasm. It comes off as all these other kind of different things, but, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I was a nerd in high school, right? And the other nerds, like, the defense mechanism is to kind of have that intellectual thing that makes you come up as snarky. But in reality, when your defense mechanism pushes people away because the only ones you want to trust to not be assholes to you because you're a nerd are the other nerds. So she has that thing that kind of wants to push other people away. But then when she realizes that this dinosaur of all fucking things is, like, bonded to her genetically... Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I've got a permanent super buddy who's a fucking velociraptor. Like, she bonds with it so quick and so closely, and it's not even questioned because that bond immediately comes beneath that layer of protectiveness that she tries to put up. And then I think as she's doing these things with these people, even if they're from the different backgrounds, they get under that layer too, and she starts to, like you say, be protective and motherly of them almost because she's in that. She's in their group now. And the nerds, if nothing else, are protective, savagely protective of their group. And I think she's a great characterization of a high school nerd.
Definitely.
And another thing I kind of like about her is it would have been easy for them to make her nerdy, but to use like a comics body shape. But she's, I don't know, I feel like she's...
Like make her fit and give her double D's and then call her a nerd?
Yeah, I just put glasses on her.
It's Wonder Woman with glasses. What a dork.
Yeah, but, I mean, do you know what I mean? It's like here there's like real variety in characters in this comic.
Yeah.
She's shaped like a normal, you know, high school person.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is actually really refreshing to see. When somebody pointed out that she was chubby, I was like, or somebody, I think one of the parents was being mean to her and they said something along those lines. And I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me either until that part came up.
But because that's exactly, that's what makes that art good for that character, is that it's so natural that it's not even something that you notice, right? Like, if she had been Wonder Woman with glasses, it would have stood out and been so horrible. But the fact that you don't even notice until one of the other characters said something, you're like, oh, hey, yeah, she's actually not Wonder Woman with glasses. She's just a normal fucking chick. That's great.
Yeah, and just kind of in contrast, Carolina is much taller, like clearly much more fit. We see like exposed midriff a lot of the time. And for her, that makes sense too, because her parents are clearly like...
Super fucking hippie.
Yeah.
They're TV stars, right?
Exactly. I think they're supposed to be like California hip, like everybody out here, you know, eats vegan food and, you know, we're all that sort of, I don't know, that like airiness to us because we're from California. I think they're supposed to be that.
Yeah, well, I go surfing every day, so.
Yeah, I only eat soy. Every part of my diet is soy.
You can look at Carolina and, like, you could say, okay, that girl probably has her own physical trainer. And that makes sense for her character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, based on what we know about her background and her parents, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, that's correct.
Yes.
That fits with her.
So none of us thought Chase was their favorite character?
Well, see, like, well, you asked for our favorites, right? I'm not saying I don't like the rest of the team. Because I actually liked Alex a lot too, but well, I read the whole run, so I was gonna stop there.
See, but Alex, I like Alex too, and I think part of the reason I really like him is because he doesn't fall to the leader syndrome. Like, whenever you get a team like this, for some reason the leader is always the douchiest, most annoying character. Think Leonardo, think Cyclops. Like the leader's always the fucking worst. And no matter how many stories that are written about them where they actually get to be badass, they're still the fucking worst. It's still Cyclops. It's still fucking Leonardo. Right? But for some reason, Alex doesn't fall into that. Alex really is just trying to get through this and get it done. And just lead them.
Yeah, and his main goal is to protect Molly.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, too. He doesn't necessarily look at himself and say, I'm in charge. He looks at himself and he's like, ah, we're all in deep shit. We need to go protect this 12-year-old girl.
Well, and like I see the way he does lead the team, but he says, it's more like, okay, guys, we need to make a decision. It's not like, this is what we're going to do because I said it's what we're going to do. Do you know what I mean? He kind of persuades people into it instead of making demands and pushing people around, you know?
And he presents it in a logical way that makes it hard for anybody to disagree with him.
Yeah. His superpower is actually, like, pretty much being really strategic. And it makes sense that that would transfer over from, like, games and fights and stuff into people skills, because there is a strategy in dealing with people and coordinating a team.
Mm-hmm.
So. Right, and I like that, too, because they didn't... His dad called him a master strategist or something like that, or they does strategy on an unparalleled level. And I like that because they didn't just make him another genius. Like, I feel like it would have been such an easy to cop out to say, oh, he's the eighth smartest kid in the world. Like, you know, he's below Amadeus Cho and below Hank Pym, but he's still above everybody else. You know, it's so easy to make another genius kid, prodigy, whatever. But no, he's smart in this one really specific area. And the details all throughout kind of plant that seed, right? Like, at the beginning, he's not Invisible Woman. He's not Hulk. He's Captain America. He's the leader. Like, he's always sort of subtly in this leadership placement in the comic. And then not so subtly by the end. Okay.
Do we know if he's the oldest?
No, Chase is the oldest. But, okay. I think I just spoiled that, but...
No, because in the, I think in issue 3 or 4 at the beginning, they, like, show a family tree of all the kids and, like, give their ages.
Oh, I don't have that.
Aww.
Well, later you find out in a later issue that Chase was born first out of all the kids.
That's not spoilers.
No.
Okay, well, I suppose not. But yeah, Chase is, there's also another part where it's revealed that he's the only one with a driver's license also. Because, yeah, that's why they drive around in his cool van.
I thought Carolina has a car. I guess no license.
I don't know. They only ever drive in maybe, but well, they travel around in Chase's van. That's another thing I like about him. I love his explanation of why he has a
that
white
van?
Panel van.
It's because the creepiest. It's
like, But he's not doing it for, like, creeper reasons. He does it because there's so many around that the car just blends in. And it's easy for him to stay under the radar and, you know.
Yeah, those are creeper reasons.
Well, no, I think it's also something that fits his personality, right? Because he's supposed to be the dumb jock stereotype. Or he's getting there, at least, if you listen to his father, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he's really that high school stereotype, then that's sort of the opposite coin for the nerd, right? Where instead of being protective with his friends and pushing everybody out, he's, in his normal life, I imagine, just lets everybody in automatically. And it seems like within this group, he tries to do that too, right? Like, when he gets to their mansion in the first issue, he says, "Hey, Alex, what's up, bro?" Not because, you know, not just because he's a douchey bro and he's maybe a little bit racist with, you know, Alex being black or whatever, calling him brother and he calls nobody else brother. But, like, he's the first one to initiate contact. Like, he's a social kid, right? So his retreat isn't going to be with his friends like the nerd. His retreat is going to be being alone and being in isolation and being hidden. So his car makes perfect sense. Like, when he gets in his car, he doesn't want anyone to know which one he is. He just wants to fucking go and be the fuck alone. And that's also why I love he has that little hideout, that, like, hidden mansion in a cave.
So cool.
That thing is awesome. But I think that's another thing that, like, for the high school stereotype, fits perfect for that character. So, who's everybody's least favorite? Is there anybody that you didn't like?
No. There's not really one I didn't... There's none of them I didn't like. I think that the characters were all... They play off each other really well. There's nobody I hate. I guess... I think the one that I find the least interesting probably is Carolina. But I think that's because... I think I feel that way because she's the most... She's the most outwardly, like, powerful character.
Yeah.
Like, Molly's probably stronger than her, but Molly is a kid and is, like, a freshly minted mutant, right? So she doesn't have all the cool... She doesn't know how to use her powers, like, totally yet.
Not developed, not trained. You know, her body's still developing.
And I'm not saying that Carolina is a bad character, you know? It's like, she's, because, like, all the other characters are so, they have powers to a certain degree, but they're very limited, you know? They're not so dynamic, like, I don't know, like, Human Torch, who turns into fire, basically, right?
Yeah.
Or Cyclops, who shoots these super powerful beams or has knives or hands, like Wolverine or something, right? None of them have that kind of thing. So she's maybe the... It's not that she's the least interesting, but she's the most familiar, so it doesn't feel as new and fresh to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
no, that makes good sense. I don't know, for me, every time, like the first issue or two, when Chase came up, my reaction was always, ugh, Chase, such fucking douche. And then I was like right at that breaking point when he puts on the X-ray goggles, you know, in his parents' lab, and I go, oh my god, yes, okay. And then when he keeps them, it's like, oh, you're a douchebag. And he's like, because, you know, it's like, 10 pages later, he still has the goggles on the top of his head, and he's got, like, the fucking piston finger things on, you know? And it's like, of all the shit in the lab that you could have taken with you, of course this surfer jock would take the X-ray glasses. But then I realized slowly, you know, I probably would too.
But it's not like he has them on constantly.
No, it's not like he's wearing them all the time.
And he's not even, like, pervy about it, I don't think. Because it's not like he knew. He was, like, genuinely surprised. And was like, oh, this is interesting.
I'm going to keep these.
Yeah. And see, I think maybe that's... So part of the reason why I read the entire Volume 1, all 18 issues in one sitting, is because I really wanted to know. Like, in the first 6 issues, you kind of get a feel for the characters, but I don't feel like you really get to know them yet.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, what's going on here? There's so many interesting things happening. You don't learn anything about their parents, really, except they're bad guys, and that each pair has some kind of...
Like a shtick.
Extra, you know, abnormal abilities. And so I just got sucked in. And so, like, what I will say to you, my response to what you said about Chase is that you need to read the rest of the issues, Andy, and I think you will feel differently about him.
You know, I really do want to, because at the end of this first volume, the first volume is a lot of just introducing characters, which is fine, because they're new characters, and it's a new team, and it's hard to introduce this many people this quickly and have a story this fast. And so I feel like at the end of it, you don't really get to know them, they're just kind of, you have to rely on your idea of that teenage stereotype, and then add the twist that's on them, you know, like add the power twist or this twist or that twist. They're just a little bit of a twist, and you get connected to them by the end of the first issue, but I don't think you don't really get to know these characters. Even though you like them, you don't really know them specifically. You know them as the stereotype plus the twist.
I suppose, but I think that it's hard to really show your audience characters in depth when you have this many. And also, the authors kind of do a good job of going a little beyond the twist and saying there's something more to each of these people.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we see, like, Nico's mom is like, kids who wear black nail polish do drugs. So what type of household is she raised in if her parents think things like that? And the first panel that we even see of Chase is him getting punched in the face by his father. Mm. Not, like, kind of hit, but he's, like, full-on socked in the face. Mm-hmm. So it really makes you wonder how that's affected him as a person. And, you know, he's kind of like this super chill, like, stereotypical bro. But at the same time, like, maybe being so chill is a defense mechanism against his dad's anger issues or something. I mean, we don't know yet, but it kind of gives us a neat hint about who they are.
Yeah, and I think that's the real strength of this writing for this comic, is that there's just, like you say, there's hints. There's, like, really good hints dropped throughout, and that's the perfect way to build character. I mean, you can beat the reader over the head with something, but that's not the way life happens. Life happens where you have a conversation about the fucking weather or what you had for lunch, and then there's a little hint about that person's actual character in there. You know, just like the way they happen to describe something, or they mention something else offhand in between sentences, and that's how you really get to know somebody. And so here we see the stereotypes, and we get the little hints. And that's how we get to kind of know them as we're sitting here experiencing this thing with them. So, okay, let's move on to the next, like, thing. What was everybody's, like, favorite scene? What moment in the comic did you, like, love or hate?
Oh, man. I don't even know if I had one.
Okay, well, then I'll start.
Okay.
My favorite is when they were sitting in the cave and coming up with names for each other. Because, of course, Gertrude's going to choose, you know, arsenic and old lace, right? And, of course, she's going to make the dinosaur old lace, because that's the most ironic thing. The thing that kills you isn't going to be the arsenic. It's going to be the old lace. I love it. And then I love the back and forth between them. I love that Molly wants to be called Princess Powerful. And I love that Nico is, I don't want to say stupid, but she's so not thinking about the future because she's a teenage girl that she makes her name, her AIM name, like her IM password or her IM handle. That's, I'm sorry, that's fucking stupid, because then, like, 5 years from now, if you are a superhero, then anybody who was ever friends with you on AOL Instant Messenger knows what your secret identity is. Like, there's no chance for it. There's none. Right? Like, if tomorrow we found out we were superheroes, right, and I named myself Jolly Andy.
You'd have to have a Santa Claus theme.
Oh my god, that'd be so fucking fun. I could throw, like, trick presents out of the back.
Yeah, you'd be like a Green Goblin character, except instead of the glider, you have, like, a
fucking sleigh.
Reindeer or something.
Oh my god.
Wow.
With a red nose that shoots lasers.
Sick. I get it on Photoshop tomorrow.
Like the Borg whale?
Yes.
Sorry, inside joke.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, we will have to bring this up later, but that Borg whale is fucking scary.
You have to share this, definitely.
But yeah, so, like, the whole Sister Grimm, like, the whole moment of them sitting there, not only do you get the stereotypes for the fact that they're teenagers, you get the stupid teenage interactions, but you also get the all the cool insights into their character, and you get to see them, instead of sitting there being bored or arguing with each other or moving, they're just kind of there regrouping, getting to talk, and finding something to bond over in that moment. And I really liked getting to see them sitting there doing that.
Well, how about Chase's name? He wants to be called Neo.
Because he's unoriginal and kind of dumb. It's okay. And I imagine he has the affectation for it, too. I imagine he sounds a little bit like Keanu Reeves.
In, like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whoa. He's got the whoa down, no problem. I know it.
I like how he names Molly Bruiser.
Yes.
It's, like, the most not-fitting name that he could possibly have for her.
Okay, so did the other one of you come up with a favorite scene? While I was talking at you?
I
think I kind of did. Okay, so I gotta preface this by saying, like, they're all really good and they all fit so well into the flow of the narrative that it was hard to come up with a favorite. But I think it's when we discover Molly is a mutant and she wakes up and, you know, we see her nose bleeding and then she's like, something's wrong with my body. And, like, that was my favorite because it fixed what I thought was going to be a problem and the only one I was seeing with this comic, where I did not want some, like, coming of age, like, this is your body bullshit in the middle of this, because this is targeted towards a younger audience, like older children, adolescents, teens, and I didn't want that weird, like, moralizing over it, or not moralizing, yes. Like, I didn't want it in there. And then it was like, she kept hinting so strongly at it. And you're like, no, I don't know. And then it's like, oh, but you're a mutant. Okay, now we know what's wrong with your body.
And they all stopped her and cut her off before she could explain, blood coming out of my nose. It's coming out of my nose. They all stop her at my.
And I think that's kind of the part where I was just like, no, don't do that, because that's, like, you're hinting too heavily there.
No, I really like that, too. Because the whole time you're sitting there, and I like the reveal when it was like, oh, that's what you're talking about. And she's like, yeah, guys, I'm not fucking stupid. Like, yeah. That other thing that you thought I was going to ask about, I'm fucking 11. It's cool. I kind of got that.
Remember when she was talking to her dad about it, and then she's like, I could just look it up on Google.
Yeah.
Like,
she knows what all that stuff would be.
Wonder in the Marvel Universe what results you would end up with on Google if you typed in, I think I might be a mutant.
In the Marvel Universe, it has to be just like in the Grey's Anatomy textbook, right?
Yeah, I mean, would they give you like a helpline for the X-Men or something? Charles Xavier's School for Gifted Children?
Or you could look on, like, evil Google, like, go back to Lycos, and then you'll come up with, like, the Brotherhood of Mutants instead.
Well, there's that part where, when Alex calls the police officer, and he's like, why don't you call the Avengers hotline? He's like, are you stupid? That's just a recording.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
What's great, though, is that he did call it before. That's what that means. Yeah. He has called it before, just for funsies.
I think he says that he's been calling it since he was 8 or something.
Do you remember at some point in some X-Men thing we read, like, Beast is actually just sitting around the Avengers Tower, and they're like, you know, watch out for incoming calls, and he actually gets, like, a phone call, and they go and address it? And it was super unrealistic, because it's like, you wouldn't just have one of the Avengers hanging out taking phone calls.
I think that's in the one of the Dark Phoenix things we read, where she falls in the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember which one it is, but yeah, I think you're right.
That was like the first, it's like the third or second or third episode. I don't remember which one, but.
It was very early in.
Yeah.
I know it had Nightcrawler in it, I think. I'm really certain.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was early on.
Anyway.
Okay, so the other thing we got to talk about, I mean, this is a comic book. Do we like the art? It was a little kind of more cartoony, I want to say. I don't know, less gritty or serious looking of art than we normally get. Did you guys like the style?
So when you guys read this, you read it online, right?
Yeah.
In what form factor was it presented? Were the pages normal sized, like Marvel comic viewer normally shows you?
I don't know. Yeah, well, it was at this. Yeah, I'd say yes then.
It was laid out the same, tend to be about 2 or 3 panels tall instead of the normal kind of 3 or 4. So yeah, it was probably panels, more manga sized.
Okay, because looking at the art, it's a lot less detailed, and it makes me wonder if you enlarged it into like the normal form factor for trades, would it look weird? Because it looks fine when it's like tiny.
It doesn't look weird. It looks kind of just almost like, like the transition, if you were to like play Zelda on the SNES, you know, like Zelda: A Link to the Past, and then you'd jump straight to Wind Waker cel shaded Zelda, you'd be like, okay, this feels kind of more cartoony, but it's not like necessarily less detailed. I don't know, is that a good analogy? Like, it just feels a little bit more cartoony.
I don't know. I liked it. I thought that the art did a good job of conveying facial expressions. I feel that's something I feel like is kind of hit or miss with comics. Some artists are really good about showing dynamic expressions on people's faces, and this comic does a really good job of it. Because I kind of hate it when it's like a person's face and they're almost like, you know, like stone face. There's no expression on their face at all, and there's like this word bubble coming out, and it's some kind of emotional statement. It's like, what? That doesn't make any sense, and that often hangs, like, I get caught up by that when I'm reading. But this comic did a really good job of showing facial expressions, I thought. So
yeah, it made it correlate, so it made sense.
I wouldn't say that I love the art. This isn't, I mean, it's not like Alex Ross or something, but you know, it's good, and I think it's thematic. Like it fits the tone of the comic really well. I think it's paired well with the story and the characters.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I'm noticing as I'm flipping through is that characters maintain the same same mode of facial expression. It's not like they're wearing the same expression all the time, but throughout the comic, like, Carolina always looks maybe a little like pouty faced and slightly ticked off. Alex always looks worried or kind of, you know, thrown aback. Nico looks super concerned, and Chase always ends up looking like somewhere in between, like outraged and amazed. And it's really consistent for each character, which I thought was actually pretty impressive, keeping track of how you want each and every one to feel at all times.
Yeah, and that sort of consistency is really necessary when you have 6 brand new characters on a team. You know, I think that quality of art, you know, definitely plays into it, and style of art definitely plays into it, and I think all those things worked in this comic book's favor, but I think the most important thing, like David said, was the quality of the facial characteristics, you know, so that you can get a sense of this person looks different from this person, looks different from this person. But then also, like you just said, Jen, the consistency to keep that up every issue, throughout the issue, without variation, so that you get a constant, consistent visual representation, like a solid idea, not just from hearing them speak from that point of character, but having an idea of what they look like that doesn't change because they're new, all right? I mean, it's not like Peter Parker's Peter Parker, great. I have, you know, 30 years of Peter Parker to make me think of what Peter Parker looks like. No, I have 30 pages of what Alex looks like to know what Alex looks like.
Yeah.
It has to be consistent. And I think it was awesome. Who was the artist on here? I didn't put it in the notes.
Oh, man. Hold on.
Let's see. It is not right immediately in front of me for some reason.
Okay.
Adrian Alfona.
Yeah.
Okay. Alfona. I've never heard that name, but Adrian, you did a good job.
Yeah, and then inker is David Newbold, and colorist is Brian Reber.
There's I have 2 inkers listed for all 6 issues.
Oh, I'm looking. I was actually just looking in. I'm only looking at issue 3. So.
Okay. So for all of them, Craig Jung also did some of the inking.
Okay. And the the creators are credited as Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfona. So he's not just the artist. Or she. I don't know. That's more of the male spelling of Adrian, right? But I guess it...
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and that's actually kind of cool because if you think about it, if the artist was the one who had a lot of the conception for these characters, that explains why he's able to draw them with such good consistency.
Yeah, they've probably been bouncing around in his head for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have anything left to say before we want to rate it?
I think we need to talk about the covers.
Ooh, yeah.
Do we have the same covers, Jen?
I looked them up online, and I think there are only some... I actually have all 6 covers in my copy.
Okay.
And let's see. They're by Takeshi Miyazawa. I don't know if I butchered that, but, oh, man, they're like... So I assume you guys have one kind of... like a painting of each character.
Yes. Yeah? Yes. Yeah. I do believe it was the same on Marvel Digital.
So, well, the cover, so issue 3's cover is actually credited to somebody named Joe Chen.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
And so is issue 4 is Joe Chen as well. Issue 5. Yeah. I'm looking on my comic shop and all the covers are credited to Joe Chen.
Interesting.
So maybe the manga ones have a different...
Yes, there's a very different style, like very anime, or I guess manga style cover for the... I think they don't call them trades, they call them digests.
For issue... Which one are you talking about? Issue 3?
The whole volume.
So, okay, so what does your issue 3 cover look like, Jen, in the manga collection thing?
I know the first one is Nico, and then issue... 2, I think, was Carolina flying?
No, that's issue 3. Okay. Yeah, she's like kind of flying with like her ponytail whipping kind of.
Yeah, issue 2 was Alex, right?
Yeah, okay. So I think we do have the same kind of
covers. We do.
Yeah.
Man, okay, do you guys have a favorite or do you like them?
Number 4. Issue 4's cover with Gert hugging the raptor.
Yeah, I like that
I want
lot,
that
too.
On my wall.
Okay.
It's amazing. I want it on my wall. Because the raptor even, like, looks happy to be getting the hug.
The raptor has, like, a bull ring in its nose, yes. too. I think that's such a nice little detail.
I just love that the raptor looks happy because she's hugging it the same way, like, a dog would look happy getting a hug from its master. But it's a fucking velociraptor. What about you, Jen? Which one did you like the most?
Well, that was a really close tie with, I think, it's so hard. The one with Carolina, I thought to be, it's just, like, really well composed. It's very traditional, like, you would see, like, Wonder Woman or Supergirl or Power Girl hanging out in this pose. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's toned down so much for this character. She's super casual, like, jeans, t-shirt, no shoes, and it's just, I don't know, I love it. It's really well done.
Yeah, she's kind of got the pose that I think they were going for with Catwoman number 0. That big cover fiasco, do you guys remember that? They had the cover where Catwoman was just boobs and a butt, and it was kind of in this pose, but twisted worse, and the proportions were off, you know? But what I really like about this one is that it's sort of off-kilter, and she's up in the air, and you get the sense of freedom just by looking at the cover. You get that feeling, and it feels good. And for her character, that fits perfectly, because whatever life she's had, she called that bracelet an anchor, you know? She said, this bracelet's been, you know, it's been anchoring me back my entire life. So to take it off, she finally feels free. And so this cover is a great personification of her character.
You know
that one, and number one felt really good too, Nico.
Oh yeah, the Nico one was really cool. Just a short comment on the Carolina one. Remember, I think it was it All-Star Superman?
Yes, where he's sitting on a cloud.
Yeah, this has the same amount of, like, lightness to it.
Mm-hmm.
So your favorite was the Nico cover?
No, my favorite has to be Gert hugging the raptor.
Oh, okay.
I agree with Andy. I love that one.
It's adorable. But it not only is it adorable, it also fits her character, right? We were talking about her being a nerd and having that inside attachment and how she has it to this raptor. And so, of course, the cover would be her, like, bear hugging the raptor.
There's actually another really good one. There's, like, that we didn't read, but the cover for issue 15 is really cool, too. You know how back, like, around 2003, these yellow Hummers were driving around everywhere? Everybody saw them?
Yeah.
So it's Molly lifting one of the yellow Hummers.
Awesome!
It's like, really cool, like, the angle that it's from. It's, like, from Molly's feet. So the Hummer looks massive above her. It's a cool one.
Go, go, Princess Powerful!
Yeah. That's super awesome.
Okay, let's rate it. We're getting close to time. Let's go ahead and rate this. Jen, you go first since you picked this one.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 5. What the fuck?
Ooh.
I can't help it. The art's not my favoriteest art ever. And I won't even necessarily say it's, like, the best or most consistent art ever, but I think it portrays the characters really well. It's dynamic, has a good sense of action and pacing. The writing, I thought, was superb. I was really engaged. One of the things I really appreciated about this comic is, like, a lot of the time you'll see in superhero comics a big bad that is way more powerful than the hero. And it's really frustrating when the hero wins with the power of heart or the power of protagonist. And here, of course, the parents are way more, you know, like, way better at this than their kids are, because they've had years of practice and they've honed their skills and
they know all the secrets and all of the things that they've been lying about. They know all that info. They have that advantage too.
Like, they're definitely, like, way, way, way more powerful. But at the same time, it makes perfect sense that in every fight the kids are going to win, because what parent actually wants to hurt or kill their own child? Like, there isn't one. That doesn't happen. And Carolina's mom is, like, a little sketch at points, but she never actually does anything. Like, she threatens a lot.
Yeah, she does a lot of talking.
And you get the impression, yeah, she'd kill Gertrude, but she would never hurt Carolina or the others. And I think she says at one point, you know, Gertrude was the expendable one, but which is horrible.
Yeah.
But she's not going to kill her own child. And I think because all these villains are friends and they're close, because they have this, like, even more closeness than the kids do, they don't want to hurt each other's kids either, if they can help it. So I think it solved that problem to the point where it felt fairly realistic for a superhero comic. And I appreciated that a lot. So 5.
All right, David, you can go next.
I also feel like I should give this a 5. Because, I mean, I feel like that I can't, because, you know, when we first, I knew that this was a good comic, like I had heard a lot about it, and I know it's won some awards and stuff, but, you know, this typically isn't the, this is not something I would pick up off the shelf, but I was so pleasantly surprised with this comic that, like I mean, I said it before, I read the entire first volume in one sitting because I was so engaged and sucked into it. It's just it's a great comic. I think, like Jen said, the art's not the best we've ever seen, but you know, it works really well with this comic. Like everything, it's so well crafted. All parts come together to make an amazing whole.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a superhero comic, but it's not like the stuff I don't feel like there's anything like this available nowadays. Even the other comics that Marvel has released, like Avengers Academy, that covers teenagers, has teenage heroes and stuff, none of them are as good as this. Maybe, well, that's not true. Young Avengers is really, really good also, but this is if you take it as a whole, it's a really good comic. Everything's great about it, and everything works really well together. So 5, easily a 5 for me.
All right. Okay.
Don't fuck this up, Andy.
Don't fuck this up. I mean, I think just strictly talking about the quality of the comic, I want to give it a 4. I mean, it's a really good comic, and I really loved reading it, and I think what I like the most is that you get so much just from the little details, the little lines that are placed in places, and it's such a great way to build the character because it happens subtly. It builds on the stereotypes that you already kind of have in your head for these characters. And it lets you get into the action right away. And these details just happen over the course of the action. You know, like, one of my favorite details, and I completely forgot that this happened to me when I was reading this, but you brought up, Jen, that they said Gertrude was the expendable one. And I was sitting here thinking, fucking really? Chase is the expendable one. At least Gertrude's kind of smart. Right? And it makes me wonder, why isn't Chase the expendable one? Like, what's Chase like? Maybe Chase has something going on I don't know about that doesn't, but it's just one of those things that's said in an offhand line, and you gotta say, like, wait, what? Why her? You know? And then, Jen, you brought up about how, you know, how of course they're gonna beat the parents, but they don't ever, like, win in an all-out fight, because Alex is smart enough to not do that. And all they're trying to do, like, they go in, they have a plan, they have a goal, and that goal never involves beating their parents, because he knows they can't. He knows they have the upper hand. The goal is go in and get Molly. The goal is go in, do a little bit of recon, and get the hell out. The goal is never, let's go in and kick some fucking ass. Like, if you're reading fucking Thor or the Avengers, that's always the goal, is go in and kick some fucking ass. And everything works great, but self-contained, I want to give it a 4, except it's so rare to see original characters and an original story, and so many of them. This isn't the kind of story I was expecting to read. I don't know when I've read anything like this any other time. I never heard of, you know, a whole group of kids finding out their parents are a secret society and this, that, and the other thing. Like, the story is very original. The characters feel very, very original. The power sets seem cool and new. You know, like I said about Alex, you know, you kind of expect him, you would expect them to say, oh, he's a genius. No, he's not a genius. He's just a hella good strategist, you know. He's not, none of them are powerful in a way that you expect to read when you pick up a comic book, right? Gertrude's kind of smart, but her powerful is having a fucking pet velociraptor. That's cool and new, and I like it. And it's not. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5.2. I'm going to stop rambling and just say 5. Because of originality, that's why. Something new always deserves points for being something new and getting it right. So 5. Boom.
I actually have to make a correction to something I said at the beginning of the episode.
Okay.
The comic that I had read that was a crossover with Young Avengers when I first met the Runaways was actually Civil War, not Secret Avengers. Or not Secret Invasion. Sorry.
Ooh, which side did they fall on in Civil War?
I don't remember exactly. I just remember reading it. I think they're kind of trying to stay out of everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to read Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah!
Which, if you couldn't tell, is David's pick. That's by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. We're going to read the first volume, which is issues 1-6.
So good.
I don't know what year it came out. Do you know offhand?
I don't remember off the top of my head, actually.
You know what, though? If you don't remember, we don't know what to say. If you really need to pick up this one and you're worried about what year to get it, all you have to do is go to our website, and on the right there's a button that says Future Shows. You click on that, and boom, there's an Amazon link directly to the correct comic book.
And it's 2008.
2008.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's next week. And like I said, if you need that info, it's on the website. That's www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. Please also feel free to send us an email.
Which is atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and hit us up on the social medias. You know, we're on the Twitters and the Facebooks. That's Twitters and Facebooks /APSupercast, either one of them. And you know what? Have you guys seen there's like a video going around of the new MySpace? And apparently it's looking pretty cool. I don't know. I work with students, and they say they want to remake their MySpace pages. I don't think we're going to get on that boat anytime soon, but that really freaked me out.
I'll get right on that.
I was like, no, this is weird. We're in some alternate reality where the flow of social media goes backwards. No, I want the next future thing.
After that, we'll use Friendster.
Oh, my God. That'd be so weird.
Oh, my God, Friendster. Who even remembers that?
I don't know. Well, I was on Orkut. It was horrible.
I don't even know what that
friends
one is.
In Brazil. I don't even know what the fuck is going on. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. Cool. All right then, everybody. I guess we'll see you next week. Until then.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.